Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about teaching of waves. This is an important topic for teaching sound, light, ocean waves, and earthquakes. Some of the waves that you see, but it's rather a complicated process in terms of that something passes from point A to point B, and it's not material, it's the actual energy. Now, for it, you need to get the nomenclature for various things. You have to get across the gits, you have to get across the gits, the phenomena, and the basic insight of what's going on. So often people teach by example, that is, they teach declarative knowledge. So I declare these series of things to be a wave, I declare these sorts of phenomena, the amplitude, swell, the wavelength, various things like that, across the period, the frequency, all those sorts of things, and there's different pictures of waves, and we may as well get into that before we start discussing too deeply how you go about teaching it. So essentially there are two sort of things that you can teach about waves. You can have a view of someone looking onto a wave, and when they see a wave, they either experience a wave, they see it moving, and you get a time motion picture with a whole sort of still frame, so you can look at the entire wave, and the x-axis is a dimension of spatial dimension, and the y-axis is a displacement. From that one, you can actually draw a wave, or draw a cross-section of a wave, so you can get a three-dimensional picture of a wave. You can take a slice through it and get the actual displacement of surface particles on the surface of the wave above and below. Or you can take a cross-section and put a graph of the compression, the force of the wave, and that's so on your vertical axis you can have the actual displacement of a point, XY point, that's in a transverse wave or a longitudinal wave, or you can actually have plotted pressure or voltage or some sort of phenomena which is there, which is in a wave. So that's one picture of a wave, and of course we'll start to discuss the different types of things. So that's one view of a wave, where the bottom axis is space, the other axis is some other parameter that you are measuring. So they're not necessarily the same scale. The vertical axis could be in volts, it could be in current, it could be in displacement, it could be in temperature, or reaction rates, or whatever you like. Then there's another thing, is where you, that's where you're an observer on a hill, and you observe a wave, like you're on a cliff and watching a surf wave coming in. Then there's the surfer, or the buoy, which sits in a wave, and actually experiences the measurement at a particular location. It doesn't know where the wave's coming from necessarily, or what's happening next. It's got no view of what's happening. It just measures and records, witnesses the wave as a at one point over time. So the horizontal axis is time, and your vertical axis is the same thing. So you've got the same wave, but two pictures. One is an overview picture at an instant in time, instant time over all the space, or the space associated with it, or at a point where you can describe what happens at that point in time. They're the two wave descriptions which You really need to get into your point of view. And then we have associated with these two descriptions a nomenclature that actually gives us the tools to start to describe a wave. So let's start to go through it. So a wave travels. A wave travels, and to describe a material of a uniform properties such that the wave travelling at one point, I can reasonably make deductions about the wave at another point. So this is the entire thing. I shout, and when I speak, I know that the sound will go away from my mouth. And at the description of the content in which that occurs is called a medium. Now, there is this sort of, I think, proof by intimidation that space is the one thing which is not a medium. But when you really come to think of it, space is a medium. It is something which has an elastic property with respect to electricity and magnetic field, yet it has no content. It's got no mass, it's got nothing there, but space itself can expand. So the important thing is that the space that I imagine inside my head is different from the space which can have nothing in it. I can imagine in my head a space which light cannot travel. On my graph, if I have in my head a Cartesian coordinate system and I put a flash of light, there is nothing in that space there which is, says what the speed of light is. It's our universe, and our universe has a space. That space, as though it's got nothing in it, it still behaves as if it is a medium. It is a medium. So our sort of default way, our experience of space, has got nothing in it. However, we do know that space has got this empty space. We can attach numbers to it. The actual position of things in it. This is a permeability for magnetic susceptibility. These are numbers which I can place in a unit of space. Now, I can draw another unit of space with different values. That's a unit of space in a different universe. So in our universe, our empty space is in actual fact a medium. And this is one of the things that it pains me to see that students don't understand. For years and years, they don't understand this. They say, but light can travel without a medium. It's this fantastic device. But there is a mechanism for light to travel in space, and is the properties of our space. So when when Einstein says, look, I have these postulates about our universe, it is our universe. So he says, these are universal laws. So these are laws within our universe. These are not mathematical laws. There is nothing in math that can help me derive, or it's going to be, a contentious issue. There's nothing in math. There's maths I can construct and get a formula through to construct pi or e. E is 2.7 something or other, 2.71 something or other. Pi is 3.14154. I'll just have to go back. I've got to really stress my memory here. So this is an important point. Going into waves, saying, look, we're going to discuss it, but the important thing is that when we're drawing waves and discussing it, there is these two things. This is the photograph of a wave and the experience of the wave. And when we sort of mix those two things together, we get a movie. So, like, a movie captures an entire wave, because a movie is recording points in space there and does it across. But if we don't have a movie, we have two picture forms of it. It's sort of like a I'm just trying to think of an equivalent for a life experience coming across. So if you're at a party, you can actually, and it's in a party, poll a vote who wants to have pizza, everyone wants to have pizza, or you can actually get a, and so people can say, we all want pizza. Well, that's a wave, a crest, a hunger wave going through. And look, there are wave phenomena or mathematical things associated with waves, which we find really hard. You've got a wave of anger. There's hormonal waves that come through. You've got hot flushes. You've got, there's waves in your, there's nerve pulses, which are waves. There are all these things which are waves. So there's a fundamental maths behind it and a fundamental description. So in terms of so nerve pulses is a classic example of a wave phenomena. And you have brain waves, all these types of phenomena to describe. And so there's these two descriptive points here. I've just got to really focus on this. I'm feeling a bit out of sorts at the moment. And so you've got all those things. And now I haven't even really got into it. Now let's start going through the nomenclature of waves. We've got the two description forms of waves. This is spatial-based, time-based, and I suppose movie, which is sort of a combination of the two. Then in a wave itself, you have the concept of a medium and a cultural thing where we say space is not a medium. That's because there's no particle I can perceive in it. However, it has a property of a medium. It's not a medium because it is nothing. It's sort of like a philosophical argument coming across. But it has a property of a medium, i.e. that it sustains a wave. So if you define a medium as a volume under investigation which sustains a wave, then space is a medium. But philosophically, we say space has got nothing in it, therefore it cannot be a medium. So that's that definition. And of course, it leaves students extremely confused. So in a medium, we can discuss the vector direction of a displacement. So there are these components that we have a scalar field and a vector field. So within a space, I can say for any particular point in a space, there is a what should I call? There are coordinates in that space, and with that space of coordinates, I can apply to that space of coordinates a mathematical description. So I can describe the amount of stuff in that period of space, okay, and or I can describe what that particle is doing, the temperature of that particle, or the direction of that particle, something like that. So if it's the temperature or the amount, that's a scalar, that's a scalar field. So an example of, most famous example of a scalar field is the Bose scalar field, but it could be pressure, it could be temperature. And so it is interesting that we have a heat wave is one description that the heat goes up and goes down. So we can have matter waves, which are, say, like in the traffic, which I'm traveling at the moment. Besides that, I'm going to really have to focus and concentrate going across here because I'm just driving off to a rehab occupational therapy unit at the moment, so I have to really focus on it. So now, an example of, you know, a gigantic wave is our galactic wave, our passage through the arms inside our galaxy. So we're going from our galaxy is a huge wave, and we're travelling in with it. So this is one of the things, is that waves allow you to, it's sort of like a passport, an intellectual passport, where once you know about it, you can actually have the language, the description, the ability to interact with the science and stuff like that. So it's a bit like don't know how to describe it. It's like being an intellectual adult. So a child, you have beautiful fun, things are beautiful to observe, but an adult, there's this world come across. So this is one thing I want to say, is that the galaxy has waves. There are a matter or density waves, traffic, you have waves. So you can look at the individual particles and describe the interspacing. So there's no vector associated with it, but there can be an underlying vector with them. Now, so you've got matter scalar waves, and you can have vector waves, and the vector wave is a vector component, where I can associate a quantity with a direction. So I can have a wind, which is obviously a current, a physical wave current I can have a current sort of, and this can be quite complicated. So, say in a rolling wave coming I think it's called a rally wave. The waves coming into shore. I just got to focus on here. The actual currents are going in a loop, and they're going in a loop. You can have gravity waves going in. The important thing here, I'll just have to focus. This moment, my friend, coming across here. I think I'm going in time. I'm going to have to stop this and start this a second time. Unfortunately, I've got the ability to stitch podcasts together, go all to you. I'm sort of slowly building up on it. So look, I'm going to have to leave you here at this point in time as I focus on the gentle art of art. Back again, podcasting on teaching waves. So up to this point, you would have heard me driving and talking, which is sort of a bit of a tricky thing to do cognitively. So I've done all these various chores and errands, and back to discussion of waves. And sort of left to a late stage in education of waves, and it's taught declaratively that this is a wave, that is a wave, and then it's sort of, this is the way the wave is presented here and here, and look at them, they're both waves, and it's not really understood. When I say there's a movie of watching a wave, so you can see a movie of surf crashing, or shockwave going through from an explosion. You can see a movie, and that movie tells you everything you need to know to experience a wave, and you can get two ways of analysing that movie. One is that you can take a frame from that movie, and in that sense the it's one fixed point in time, and the bottom x-axis is displaced as the actual distance, as some coordinate, and the y-axis is something, it may be displacement in the direction of the wave travelling, or perpendicular to the wave, or it may be just a density aspect of it. So that can be represented in that movie, where all points are going at the time, but, or you can get a freeze frame, as we're talking about. Or you can sit at one pixel, either in the picture or out in the field. You can have one detector, and that detector is just recording one piece of data all the time, but all of the time. So it's you've got what's recorded at that location with time in the bottom axis. These two different, or your original thing, a movie, and that can go down a freeze frame or an individual pixel going with time to allow it to be analysed, and putting it into context. And of course, people tend to do strings, sea waves, sound waves. We've got a whole lot of other waves, light waves, all these effects of waves, refraction, diffraction, all these wave phenomena they have to get to at. But there are other deeper things to do with waves, like density waves, like shock waves and traffic,
more complex motions as waves. Indeed, we're riding a wave. Our planet is riding a wave as it's travelling through the galaxy. It takes, what is it, 125,000 years for us to circuit the galaxy, and the galaxy itself, is spinning at four times every billion years, so it's 13 billion years old, our galaxy, around that 13.8 billion years old, and so it does a rotation every four times, so that's 40, about 52 rotations, that's multiplying 13 by 4, 52 times we've actually spun around, so that's a lot of times, or not a lot of times, but then in that we have actually orbited 130 times around the galaxy, which is, you know, quite a fair whack. I think that's quite a reasonable thing, but inside that we have actually undergone wave, evolved in waves. And so to actually get over the wave, we have a medium. A wave occurs in a medium, and that's it can sort of be two ways. It's a conceptual circle we draw around something. That's a medium. It's got a wave velocity. It's got particles interacting in a particular way. And we have declaratively said that space has got no substance, and substance is required for a medium, blah, blah, blah. So we've got space as something which can conduct a wave without a medium. And sort of it's a declarative, sort of complex thing to explain, but space itself is a got a breakdown voltage, permittivity. It's got a resistance to magnetism, and you can imagine or create a different universe. And so Einstein's declaration about the universe is a declaration about the actual properties of light in our universe. And so, although we don't have a medium, so to speak, we do have this space with all virtual particles jumping in and out of it, and a speed of light, and Higgs bosons all existing in space. So much so that I can actually bring two parallel plates next to each other, and bring them very, very close, and create a vacuum greater than actual space will allow, and I'll try and slam it, push those two plates together. I think it's called the Casimir effect. All these things exist out there, and just a warning to people who say that there is, I say there is space, light travels without a medium, but really that's a cultural, a tilt to a cultural thing that we have said. Similarly, we say that the Michelson-Morley is a null effect, that there is no medium space, there's no aether. But again, we get tangled because the null effect that we reserve for describing the experiment is unique to experiment. Null effect has a different meaning in psychology or other experiments. And in fact, the ether was disproved from, actually disproved. It wasn't not found, it was disproved, SEO3. And look, if you wrote that in an exam, you'd lose a mark. But ultimately you'd be right, but you'd also lose a mark. It's one of those dreadful things that at the end of the day we teach declarative stuff, and to challenge declarative stuff you'd have to be believed, almost have an election, an overthrow of the government to get that in. So similarly, space is a void, and then we have to then re-educate people that it actually is filled with virtual particles and stuff like that. So much so that there's certain giveaways that it is there. Things have mass is one giveaway. Space, you need an object and in space. It has, it's an object's interaction with space gives it mass. But also you've got these virtual particles here which are enforcers, but they're given away, oops, in, gosh, there's a real bird warfare going around here. Oh no, they're just feeding their chicks, I think, something bizarre. Hopefully they'll leave, these little birds are living alone. Hey, sort of getting back into it, you've also got virtual particles which crop up in sort of a few decimal points here and there around the place, just to tell you that space is just not a vanilla empty void of, like, if I draw a circle, a circle on a piece of paper and say, look, in that circle, my imagination, there's nothing there. Well, yep, there is an awful lot of things happening there, and they tweak the dials just a tiny little bit. Say for instance, imagine that you can actually focus a laser beam so tightly that it actually explodes space. You get a breakdown in space. Well, space has got a breakdown voltage. You know, it's just, look, there's just so much that you can talk about nothing. Really, this tilt at forcing people's declarative knowledge, which has got limitations in it, which we've discovered are limitations, really forces people to sort of look. You might get 1 out of 10 people hanging around a little bit, and 1 out of 100 will actually understand it. But you've got a vast majority of people who just pick up on the low quality of what's taught. So this is space carrying things. Now, being able to get into your mind around space is also getting your mind around medium. So a medium is saying, we're talking about a volume. That is, a volume, a surface, or one dimension. It's all medium. Medium is the thing about, is the object for which a wave goes through. And that medium, as said before, when you pull yourself all the way back, that medium, can actually be just in so many different configurations. It can be in case space, it can be in conceptual space. You can actually have a wave of population, a boom and bust in an economy, and you can get wave functions, interactions occurring in there. And let's go for it. Waves are very, very important. They're the fundamental aspects of physics and understanding. It's not so this is a nice little alleyway that people go into, observe, get out of the two of us have a little walk around and back on the bus where we're leaving waves behind. Waves are the central aspects of quantum mechanics. There's wave functions, wave interaction, lights, dipole transitional moments. Waves is the critical aspect in that a wave has energy, but the energy is over a period of things, and a particle is a wave. It's got existence over an area, and how you describe a wave, a wave doesn't have, or rarely has, a surface associated with it. So a lot of the heavy lifting we have to do to reteach quantum mechanics is that we're not teaching waves very well. But we want to get back to medium and different types of waves and different mediums and how the mediums are connected. A medium and a field and a wave field all sits together. And a field is a mathematical concept. You can talk about a force field or something, but there's also a pressure field, a temperature field. That means that for a volume or a surface or a line, I can declare a coordinate, and from that coordinate I can pull out observable piece of information. I might be able to feel that observable information or observe it. So I could have a field map of the amount of population in the area, or the amount of carbon dioxide coming out of it. It would be a map. So I can visualize cross-section of a field or sample cross-section of a field, but that full amount of data is called a field. And at each one point you can have a scalar, that is just a number, like a temperature, 36 degrees at Penrith, bang on. Or it can be a magnitude, and like a number, it could be pressure, or it could be pressure and a directional flow in a direction, so the wind speed at a particular point in time, or the traffic at a particular point in time generate it up. And all of those things can be modelled to interact with neighbours. So the essential aspect of it is a medium. A medium is discussion of a field, but telling people, I'm now going to talk about it in terms of a field, in terms of a way of interacting it. Then we say it's a medium. So all things are fields, a subset of fields intellectually, a medium or media. And so we tend to say that air and water are different media for waves. That's something you get. Or air and glass are different media and refractive index and all this type of stuff. And that means that we're going to talk about a wave traveling through it. And so for a particular medium, we discuss the velocity, typically of light or sound disturbance through it. That's how the media interact. Now, one of the things is sort of a wave coming through it. It can be a scalar medium, and the wave can have a vector component in it. So let's deal with light, for instance, as an example. I'm not getting into it all much, but say I've got a light wave going into a glass. Now, what happens is that if the light wave hits an absorption edge or absorption peak in glass, what will happen is the electrons will go from a low energy level up to a high energy level and sit there for a sufficient amount of time it interacts with the objects, and heat is either transferred or added to it, and it goes through an ensemble and light comes out at a different, sometimes infrared wavelength, or sometimes at a distance. So I put in an infrared beam into glass, which absorbs the infrared photons will excite the particles. Those particles will go around and undergo dipole transmission moments, and I will get a heat signature off. So I can put up, say, a blue laser beam and look at it in infrared, and I can see it cooking or heating the glass. There's another thing which can happen, of course, is that it doesn't absorb. It nearly absorbs, and so the light energy, right? The light energy has to be accounted for. Light energy will be stored momentarily in the electron thing, a bit like someone throwing a hot potato at you. It grabs on you, and then you throw it on to the next one, and so it re-radiates out that exact same photon. And in doing it, it re-radiates it, plays with it a little while, and re-radiates after it. And what that means is that re-radiates light, travels at the speed of light in all media, because that's the end of the story. However, some of the media can interact with the glass, the light, and re-radiate the light back a small and in phase, so it adds a phase retarded wave to your existent wave. And if it keeps on doing that, eventually the phase retarded wave will dominate and continue to pull back the wavefront. So the effect of this is you've got this big bird coming up here, a satin bowerbird. So this is the third section that I'm coming back to, and unfortunately with these podcasts I'll probably do another one where it's all put together a bit more easily. So the first section was while driving. The second section was just before the kids came home. We've got a little bit more to talk about. So we want to actually dive down into a wave. The wave occurs in a situation of a medium. And a medium is such a thing as a field. Medium is a space, three-dimensional, two-dimensional, one-dimensional space, where we can say certain things about the various properties of it. Now, fundamental thing is that nearest neighbour in that field, or the media, has to have some interaction with the outside, each cell. So if there's a value in a cell, the value of that cell has to have an influence on the one outside. So there's some sort of coordinated information transfer. So in the case, if you're looking at waves occurring in a traffic jam, the cars have an interaction between each other as they move forward in that that space, and so they avoid crashing, and that their communication in that particular way. In an air thing, for a sound wave going forward, you have the high pressure wave bounces off and pushes against a low pressure region, so transmitting that high pressure to low pressure, and as that high pressure dissipates, it creates low pressure again. It's that oscillation. And this way, it's a transmission in the direction of travel, that the actual oscillation is in the direction of travel. It's not necessarily transverse. And similarly in water, water has sort of two things. It can't actually have a shear wave, but it does actually maintain a shear wave at its interface. This is one of the things that people are just gruesomely horrible to say. So you can't have a side-to-side wave in water, something which doesn't resist a side-to-side motion, doesn't transmit this energy from cell to cell. You can push a cell, and the cell can push back. So essentially, you've got cells, and the cells have mass, essentially, and the mass can be displaced from equilibrium. The displacement of equilibrium requires a force on it, which means the cells either side are out of equilibrium. Essentially, you've got the formulation of a wave equation to describe it. So there's multiple ways that you can describe a wave equation, a wave equation basically says something about the curvature of displacement or resistance or some property of the field it's got to be some sort of formula which goes in to give you a wave equation. And essentially, this formula that you apply has a wave solution for it. That is that if I consider a very simple wave, which is a linear array of springs and masses, so there's a spring, then a mass, spring, then a mass, spring, then a mass, and it's got an equilibrium position where the masses are sort of held and there's an equal tension on each spring either side. So I can actually pull one of the masses towards me, release it forward, and its pressure will change the tension on the spring, which causes the next mass along to accelerate and move. It will go at a simple harmonic oscillation and start to pull backwards. So it will push the next mass forward and then pull it backwards. And that next mass will do the same to the next. And so that motion is transmitted forward. And so it's a wave equation basically states how a property inner media is transferred from cell to cell. It's an equation which describes that. And so it's one of these things, I suppose, when you explain it to kids, you obviously don't start off with the wave equation, but when you're more experienced, you sort of look at the media, and then you look at how it's described, and then you look at how the wave equation goes for it. Now, this goes for quantum mechanics, that there is a property of existence which is described by a wave equation, and it's a property of existence and the energy associated with that existence. So if it's got a lot of energy, a lot of kinetic energy, it's existing at a point where it's got a much higher energy than what's holding any forces associated. It's got great kinetic energy, it's got great motion. That will put into the wave equation, will say that that existence will change its rate of existence, change the rate of existence more dramatically proportional to two things: its existence and also the amount of energy available. Now, that sounds a bit strange, but that's a Schrödinger wave equation, which says that curviness, the frequency of a wave, is proportional to the energy deficit. So more energetic a wave is, the faster it's oscillating, and that gives you naturally de Broglie's equation, but it also describes atoms as a wave. So atoms, electrons, and all that are definitely in the wave equation if you go across that. So there's a limit to what you can do, but there is this, when you're introducing it, this idea of the wide variety of things that can go, but mention a lot, and then say we're going to just do a string, a rod, light. There's going to be very few things, but these are sort of like little, like you're doing an archaeological dig, and these are the little areas of this beautiful mosaic which we're clearing up, and you'll see little patterns. And what happens is that after a certain while, you'll know where to sweep away, and you'll be able to discover yourself the entire pattern. So there's sort of virtually, I don't know if there's any benefit for actually being taught this. I think it's more benefit for making physical discoveries. Yeah, well, for sure. If you go in a lab and you actually use this stuff and use equations, you get a completely different opinion as to starting at second hand, where people tell you things. There's sort of a bit like this difference between having a go to paint something yourself, you're trying to paint it yourself, and going to a museum, and you can often sprout a lot of facts, and you can have the feeling of knowledge, but you don't have the spirit of wave equations as you go across. And definitely, can I say, as a laser physicist and quantum physicist, you really get a good feeling for waves. It's not something that you that exists in a paper. You can generate it. Now, there's something very cosmic about lining up a laser, and essentially you get different waves as you vary the mirror. You can get different nodal lines, and you can actually physically see what looks like an atom coming out of your laser, the actual structure of an atom. Similarly for an optical fiber, exactly the same thing. The light going down an optical fiber is not this, is definitely a wave coming across, and you can adjust it such that you can see these wave patterns. So it's something very much a physical thing, and so perhaps this is one of the things that if you haven't done it, and you're teaching it, and you hear someone next to you sort of in the next classroom around just having an odd conversation with students, getting a bit confused, and you don't know, you know, what it is like to experience waves and things like that. So there's various techniques come across. So what I have to say is mention situations, mention the idea of a medium, a media or medium for a wave, mention a field, general mathematics stuff, and mention the cultural thing that we say that there is, that space is without media. This is just, students will accept it quite readily, saying that the correct answer for for school science is that light does not require a medium to travel in. Light does definitely require space to travel in, and space can be curved, and you can actually bend light throughout space, and it's one of these more complicated things. And then you want to introduce the language of waves, and the language of waves very much varies very much on how you actually on very much how you set it up. And so, as I've said, the movie, the snapshot, or the experience of a wave. Those, so the snapshot with the X at the bottom, the experience with the T at the bottom, and that's just one aspect of it. So, going for this snapshot, you can measure the wavelength between crests and troughs. You can measure the amplitude, which is the excursion from equilibrium. So the amplitude is excursion from equilibrium. And so, therefore, if you can say what an equilibrium is and what a restoring force is and how the waves can actually go. So you can actually have a snapshot. And there's this thing that if you've got a transverse wave, so you can do a snapshot of a transverse wave and sort of magnify it. So you can have a transverse wave going down a ruler, for instance. You've got a ruler and you twang it, and the wave goes along that ruler. You can have a transverse wave and you can massively expand it. Or you can have a longitudinal wave, which is goes along, but you can still draw it as if it was a transverse wave by just moving away from you as up and towards you as down. You can convert that into a graph. So it looks exactly the same, but you have to then explain what the transverse motion is. So this is why one of the things that, say if I've got a longitudinal wave, and I put it, graph it, as if it was a transverse wave, the actual point is not actually at, say, 3 centimetres. In a transverse wave, that point goes to an excursion to 2.999 to 3.001. If it's got a transverse of 2/1000ths of a millimetre, that is no longer, that X is not accurate anymore because it's moving back and forth, and I suppose there's a fundamental confusion there. But you've got wavelength and amplitude and swell. So swell is peak to trough distance. Now, if it's a photograph, you have got no time information. You've got spatial information. Then, if you've got time information, you can just witness what comes past, and for that you get the time between maxima, which is the period, and then you have the relations that one of the period is the frequency. Now, those two graphs together, neither one of them gives you the actual velocity of the wave going forward. And so, this is an important point to come across. A movie, you can see it, and you can actually add those two things together, information to do it. So if you have a frequency and a wavelength, the two together, combine the two together, you can get the velocity. So if you can sort of reconstruct a bit of a movie, then the other thing you have to do is with waves is the fact of called linear supposition of waves. So I've got two waves traveling and they come to each other and they can cancel out, and there's a sort of various demonstrations of it. And of course this is really important, that this does not always work. You can not get a linear supposition of waves, and this is very important for creating non-linear frequency mixing. And so this is pretty strange that you can actually get two long wavelength waves, put them into a media which just doesn't like it, and it could actually basically listen to it, can it sort of like screech. So you put low things in it, that sort of screech hum, and you get waves like that. So there's all this summing and addition of waves, and you can also sample waves. And I suppose this has got me thinking about how you teach waves, because I'm up to this point where I'm looking at MRI, which is a whole series of things, putting waves into quantum mechanical systems and putting in a wave, extracting a wave. You put in frequencies in a magnetic field, you put frequencies in such a way that it extracts a picture of your brain. And what that really does is that and that picture comes out of wire. So it's how does that work? And so we come up to this point in time. So let's have a summary. We've got media. We've got modelling of the media, which is weights and springs, or reaction of the media to input. So space responds to light by providing a electrical susceptibility or permissivity and a magnetic susceptibility of it, of space has it. So there's a response to it, the modelling of it. But it means that if you have a broad definition, you can really apply that space to different things. You have sort of dual the nomenclature with waves, with also the subtle understanding that there are these big classes of describing waves, that is the snapshot of waves over space, or a point in space where it experiences a wave in time, and trying to work that out. Then you have obviously one of the things is that waves apply to light, optical fibers, atoms, and things like that. And what you tend to find is poorly taught waves meant that people tend to not explain things and then fall upon particle theory to explain things. Then we've got all these wave phenomena to come across, that is superposition of waves, and non-linear effects of waves. That's when they don't superimpose, they actually produce higher frequencies, in general higher frequencies. Modulation of waves, encoding of information. Now, the MRI machine does this pretty amazing thing. It creates a sweet spot where the magnetic field is just right for the wavelengths used, and so that creates a plane. It's adjusted, so there's a level and a gradient, so if you can imagine magnetic field weak at the bottom but slowly building up, you can create a gradient. Yes, darling? This is the fourth section on waves. You'll hear all as one continuous part, and it's worth sort of reflecting, that's a wave idea as well, sort of how the various things are coming together. Now, firstly, I've just organised it such that you can cobble together podcasts without opening up another piece of software, which means you can do this very quickly, but unfortunately, in terms of listening to a podcast, you hear this podcast, which, although it's designed to be interrupted and come back to a podcast, it means it's over a period of time. And this is not necessarily very good, because it's, you know, sort of hard to listen to things when they're restarted, so that again you're used to listening to one program with their beginning, middle and end. But then on the other hand, you can, possibly if you're astute, you can hear different ideas going up and sort of different bird calls in this case, happening at different times of the day. So that's coming across. Then I suppose there's different strands of the narrative. That's the technical strand. There's the overall strand that sort of a much larger picture, in that there's a general level of knowledge out there that you can assume people have, and there's a slightly higher level that you have to communicate to, and you start communicating at a higher level, and you go back and you say, you know what, there's certain things which are really fundamentally missing here. And that sort of happened to me. This is sort of the sub-narrative here, in terms of that I was looking at MRI scans and sort of pulling it apart. Sort of like there's you imagine like a rubbish heap. There's explanations which you pick up, oh, they're no good, and you chuck it over your shoulder. Oh, no, that's no good. Then you go down and then you get the core explanation and you realise, oh, they've used unconventional bespoke symbols and terms which don't correspond to the rest of science. That's okay. They've got difficulty explaining this. This is a wave concept, and people can't, you know, it's going to be very difficult to suddenly go wham bam, thank you ma'am, they do a Fourier transform of this, which is okay. Then you dig a bit deeper and you say, oh, there's actually a very simple explanation of what's going on, if you could explain it. And you sort of like backing out for the first time over a dark car park, you're looking out the rear vision mirror and you're just sort of edging away, just half listening to make sure you don't, you know, run over a squirrel or something like that going back. But it's actually quite a simple story, in that you create a plane in a three-dimensional field, magnetic field. This is just one example, that a force field, people think it's a region of space where you can physically feel something. It's a force field. A field in terms of science is a volume of space with data decorating that space. So we could say it's a population field. You know, if you do a census of, say, a termite colony, because that's three-dimensional, but say a two-dimensional one, a map of Australia, if you got the grid coordinate of the Australia, and for each grid coordinate you put a value, you'd create a population field. And so this is our view, and so you've got certain field values in the volume, and so you set it such that the field's only right at a particular slice to that field, and then what you do is simply encode it such that the frequency of each little part of your brain produces a wave, right, and it produces a wave of a slightly different frequency and phase. And this is pretty much like going into your brain. It's just like listening. It goes into your brain, all these different frequencies, and it gets decoded, looking for the frequency and phase. And it says, how much of frequency of this frequency, how much of that phase, frequency and phase is there? And that, plotted on a frequency phase graph, looks like a spatial graph. It's like a very simple process to get through. And you're talking about frequency and phase, and therefore you say, you know what, we really have to do a little bit better explaining what wave functions or wave is. And I'm looking at the sort of standard thing which I are taught or instruct, and this is where people get the fundamental things at sort of very low level. What is a wave in a piece of string? It's something which can travel, it's got a shape, and it's got these decorative things like wavelength, frequency, period, velocity, and then it can go through a set of decorative processes, which is not too deeply explained, of reflection, refraction, etc. And all of these sort of like superficial things which sit on a more fundamental thing of a little oscillator, which receives and transmits, so which is just like the brain, in the glass or glass or anything, any media, everything has a little, there's a little oscillator. You can put the wave into the oscillator, the oscillator keeps on going, and then that oscillator radiates out from it. Now, if you sort of block out all the oscillators and you have a small number of oscillators, those oscillators will spread out in a spherical wavefront and diffract. That's fairly simple. And there's obviously maths of the frequency and phase domain. And so you've got this group of explanations sitting just out of the grasp of, like, it's sort of like you educate people to walk to the edge of a creek, but you don't educate them to ford the creek across into Fourier space, frequency space. And there's there's just so much physics. Like modern physics is the physics of waves. So just to reel it off, you've got quantum physics, optics, signal analysis, telecommunication, so and solid state. So solid state is purely understanding waves. So a band gap is in a k-space momentum diagram. There's a band gap in a momentum diagram, and so all these things are there, and people come across and say, well, this is my explanation of, say, band gaps or quantum mechanics or anything else like that. I don't understand waves, but I do understand that waves have similar words. So I learn about waves and it gives me a certain list of words. I then apply those words incorrectly to the actual physics. And then I turn around and ask you, do I understand it? Have I got it correct? And I say, look, evidently you don't understand it, and you have got it incorrect. And the response is, let's create a story about you in it, you know, that we can proceed merrily along the place, and then I'll follow the next set of problems. Why are people disengaged? Why is Australia not competitive? And all these types of things out there. But I'm definitely not going to ask you about the initial problem of waves. And so, coming into waves, I'm saying that there is a practical understanding of media, the idea of something which contains waves, and then you have, so this is a volume which transmits waves, and then there's a cultural thing that we say that space is not a medium because it doesn't have the fundamental properties that I put stick into a wave equation. They're just not there. But indeed, there is a wave equation that we put for space, and it is about the property of space. You have to put the properties of space into the Maxwell's wave equation, and it is. But it's a little bit more complex than a local oscillator. You have, I suppose, ultimately, the irony is that Maxwell's wave equation has got special relativity built into it. In fact, special relativity is consistent with Maxwell's wave equation. Its special relativity is built as a consequence of Maxwell's wave equation, or Maxwell's wave equation can be derived from special relativity. That's one of those sort of, a lot of these things that we understand are although historically they're, we've understood one bit, and then the next they're two in the same aspect, getting it through. And so you have these things of an existence wave, like an electron is an existence wave, and it, like a wave, it comes in, it rises, and it falls, and it goes from minus infinity, rises up to a little peak at where it is, and then to my, and it's actually a wave. If you don't understand waves, you go with the Copenhagen school. And that wave can actually change shape in a quantized manner. That is, from one beat to one note to another, one spatial note to another, i.e. that it's bounded at infinity to be zero at infinity. It's got nodes on it. And as it does that, it interacts with the space with which it's held and produces a light wave, which carries off angular momentum. All these things, here you have it. A light wave does not carry momentum. It doesn't carry material and stuff like that. But of course, we know it does. It's like we know a wave can interact with something and produce momentum. Otherwise, you wouldn't get knocked over by a wave at a beach. And of course, what's happening with a wave at a beach? There is a whole series of things happening there. But a light wave is an example of something. It carries an energy that's okay, a certain frequency, but it also carries a certain amount of momentum with it. Its momentum is h on lambda, so the shorter the lambda, the bigger the amount of momentum with it. And so you could actually throw a punch with a light wave. I can imagine, I have to work out what the momentum of a fist being punched at you. But, you know, it wouldn't be pleasant. It's also, and it's got a horrendous impulse. Like, so when you get hit, but it's painful because there's a sudden impulse. In fact, the person hitting you, it's, you get injured hitting back. It's, you know, equal and opposite forces going there. So light as a wave, but it also, a light as a wave carries angular momentum. And part of carrying the angular momentum, which is plus or minus one h of angular momentum, positive and negative spin, it's all to do with the wave equations. And so it's media, wave equations, and then applications to phenomena, and then extracting from those phenomena a class of things to describe what happens in certain situations. So between different medias you have reflection and different speeds. These are all consequences of the wave equation, and so I'll probably finish it off here. In terms of the bigger picture, is that there's the stuff that you learn at school, which is speed, frequency, amplitude, wavelength. Then there's another little group of things where it's reflection, absorption, refraction, diffraction. All those sorts of things. Case specific things, and then the descriptions of it, sort of like the practical aspects of it. And sitting above it, those are consequences of a wave equation. They speak, something observed tells you something about the medium, that is, it tells you coefficients of the wave equations of the medium, and those coefficients relate to the deeper properties of the medium. It's going across. So you have these three, three major things, which is the medium, the wave equation, the phenomena, and then the description of the phenomena, which is more a declarative way. I sort of want to describe various things. And so observing about the, making observations lets you backtrack, and it tells you what seeing the waves, solving the waves, gives you a solution set, which cuts down to give you the coefficients of your wave equations. The coefficients of the wave equations then inform you about the actual deeper properties of the media, either the actual components of the media or the actual structure of the media. So like an earthquake will tell us eventually what the chemical composition of the earth is, and the crystallization, the crystal structure of the earth allows you to go back. So on one aspect you can look at waves of making a building in San Francisco wave proof. But then on the other hand you can say, well, I can now tell from that, I can tell what baby the earth is holding. It's got a little, in its belly, in its womb, is a little stainless steel ball, high chrome, a lot of nickel, a lot of iron inside, and it's solid and a crystalline concept. But I can also use that same thing to tell you that there's a crystal inside your, not directly, pretty much similar inside your kidney. Kidney stones and gallbladder stones and stuff like that. Or I can also detect you. In fact, our understanding of things, and this is very much similar to social things. We listen to conversations, we work out the character of people, and then we make a general assessment about the structure of society. So we listen to someone, he sounds as though they're in authority, we find out the actual social structure of it by that sort of similar analysis. So that finishes this podcast. I'll give something on the Podomation, the various things I'm going across, and then continue doing more on the MRI discussion. Thanks a lot for listening. Hello again. This is the possibly the fifth episode-esque put into consideration of wave science and what you should teach with it. Now, it is interesting in that this sort of new format allows you to hear continuously, or for me to record continuously, a set of ideas starting up from basic reaction to waves to teaching of it, the breaking up of the more fundamental ideas. Struggle to explain. I sort of dig down and give you sort of a roadmap to it. And sort of the roadmap had been the media, wave equation, and phenomena. And then I've sort of broken down the phenomena down into declarative phenomena. We discuss wavelength, waveform, and stuff like that, and actual phenomena, wave phenomena that we observe, and of course there's sort of a link in between some wave physics, some of the wave equations and things like reflection and refraction, and how this really really works. Say reflection comes off a mirror, and that's to do with the basic free electron waves inside a metal, and how they can respond and send. So there's a whole of mechanicalistic or mechanistic things happening deep down, which we skim off. So we've got a path which we take people through, understanding waves, and essentially many people just come in, get a very superficial understanding, get a negotiated understanding, that their understanding is sufficient to be not considered normal and stuff like that. And there's certain things in terms of like echo sounding, the ambience of a room and stuff like that. So I've got these three sections, the media, which can be the earth, it can be space, it can be the surrounding sound, it can be anything in the media. The wave equations, which the media, the combination of the sound and the media, the sound solved by the wave equations give you what's inside the media, or vice versa. It's sort of like a triangle of stuff there. But thinking about it, I was just saying, there's more cultural things, and more, there's yet a fourth barrier, which is your lived experience of waves. You have two ears, which are basically wave detectors, and they're broad frequency wave detectors, and they do basically almost Fourier analysis. Not quite Fourier analysis, but what happens is you've got all this physics happening inside your head, a hearing system. I think mammals have it. I don't know if reptiles. Well, obviously birds, a whole lot of other things. It's evolved from gills, which allows you to impedance match from an air environment into a liquid environment, because we were all originally liquid. In that liquid environment, there's a hammer and an anvil and a mechanical impedance matcher. Impedance is a wave thing. It hits a drum, a coiled drum with cochlea, which is like this snail inside your head. And inside this snail is this chamber, like a snail chamber, but it's divided in two and it's filled with water. And there are these hairs inside it, starting off with high frequency to low frequency, large hairs for low frequency. It's sort of like a reverse piano. It's like when you really come to think of it, you've got these little pianos inside your head, and where your fingers press the keys, the sound makes the keys move inside your head, and that actually is perceived as sound. It's quite a beautiful thing to go across, and sort of different frequencies activate the hairs in different ways, and your hairs fall out, and your frequency ranges drop and change, and you can have a cochlear implant I don't know exactly how that works, but it's an electrical signal that your head eventually hears. So you've got the perception of sound, and that's really not in those three previous classes. That's saying that waves actually passing the body. Your perception is a part of being alive, is detecting waves. Also, the other aspect of wave detection is sight. And you've got the different cone cells, the different frequency receptor cells, and colour. It's all colour, wave, light, shadow, penumbra, are all to do with it, and optical illusions all to do eventually with waves. But within all that section there, there's this sort of feeling that if I've got a really low understanding of waves and I don't understand quantum mechanics, I'm not missing out on anything. Or the low understanding of waves, I really don't understand solid state, I'm not missing out on anything. The low understanding of waves, I'm not really getting to, look, there's two things. There's people who can appreciate music, and people who've got far greater understanding of the social implication of music than myself. But for me, I sort of like the idea of someone controlling the wave of an electric guitar string, and that creates a magnetic, a non-acoustic wave. This guitar is the string creates electricity, and the electricity is shaped acoustically. It's sort of like a complete set of phenomena. And so these people are really interacting on one wave equation, i.e. that they're selecting variables by the fingering on the things, and then they're putting a Fourier impulse by how they strum the guitar that comes in, and you've got all that electricity going through. And then when you see it, the light comes up. It's digitized, but when it's digitized, there's all these Fourier transforms, the MP3 and all the signals and all that type of stuff is involved in a whole heap of wave analysis. And then this is actually converted into light waves, which is compressed into an optical fiber. So it's really crudely spoken, shifted to a different wavelength. So I can actually transmit a song which takes 3 minutes, and it can come down into my mobile phone in a fraction of a second because the wavelengths are contracted. So there's all that sort of social phenomena, that fourth area, social phenomena. And it sort of goes two ways. One, you can explain it. So I just happen to see here this tame pigeon coming up. What it's doing, but it's got beautiful colours and reflections. But there's a lot of what you see. It's not just a one-way street. When you appreciate waves, you then see other things. Like I see a lot of colourful clouds. I see mice scattering. Seeing this colourful pigeon, a lot of mice scattering, and optical phenomena. So it's not just a cold hard thing that you study this. I think there's actually four sections here, but there's almost a fifth section of this higher level of when you understand waves, your appreciation of nature and your appreciation of colour the ability to connect a whole series of things together, put together. And then there's also the things where they're not quite waves. It's actually digitized. It's on or off. And also the idea of noise. And there's a whole string of things to get across. And so it's like this area of knowledge which we've really developed and is essential to us, yet we're not going there, and the actual people who are saying we can't don't understand it. So it's sort of and I'm not rallying against them, because I'm not here to actually not here to rule the world or anything like that, but you notice that there is a problem that when you say, oh, life's that much better from knowing all this knowledge, or having all this knowledge, it's much richer, it's much more majestic, I think might be the word of it. And then being told, no, it's not. I don't know whether waves is pretty much like believing in Santa Claus and living in a fairy world. I think that's what people who don't really believe it think you are out with the fairies. But they'll get you to tune their antenna, get them to fix their TV. They'll thank you during that period, and then quickly it will swap over to the social structure going across. One of the things, I suppose, which sort of rather struck me is that our TV antenna just got, used to be, it's hard to say. The electronics used to be bad in the 70s, and so we used to have a huge tower mast because we were about 70 kilometres away from the radio, or the TV. And but a big tower mast is all the birds would sit on, and eventually they'd destroy antennas. And so we got a new antenna in, and this poor person said, put out there. And he said, how come I'm getting a discount? I haven't asked for a discount. And he said, oh, well, because, like, you're the only person who hasn't been rude to me. And it's sort of, which, you know, I haven't abused most people, because you do pay $300 for an antenna. It's just a piece of pulp obviously they're making a profit from it, and it just wouldn't occur to me. That's the thing. What's the benefit? So he gave a discount, but there was this profound thing that he had wave knowledge, and people were using waves, but in society, that's once they know knowledge and can use it, it's just dismissed. And we live in this world which is that much more complicated. It keeps on going. It's a vast area of, not a vast area of knowledge, it's actually a very small area of knowledge. The phenomenal thing is that the wave equation for a hydrogen atom is also the wave equation for an optical fiber. The actual dipole transition moment is, it's phenomenal. So there's this feeling of, it must be vast. It's actually, just requires time. And I don't think people have time. And, I think one of the things that, when you give people opportunities to put their hand around and say, you're selected, you're off, you've got a vision for you, how you can go in society. You're actually robbing that person, you're giving that person opportunity, but you're robbing them the ability to muck around, be left alone by themselves in a library just to go through books and work things out. So hopefully, this will be definitely the last, on waves. So just to sum up us again, we've got the media, wave equation, wave phenomenology, and actually probably a fourth area of waves, which is the physiological sensation of living with waves, and then sort of a fifth area above it, which is the methodology or the overview of the understanding of waves in general, being able to look down on those four categories and recognize society as at comparative positions through it, like an overview. So if you map all people in society or groups of society, how much they know about the different parts of waves and how that interacts with the decisions they make and how that leads on to, it's sort of like a wave equation of wave equations, how that links on to where people are at. And it's not something to rail at, it's something to observe and theorize, to use inductive logic to say, this is what I observe, could this be it? There it goes. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.